Today is Wednesday, March 31st, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, millions of migrants expected at U.S.-Mexico border.
The U.S. Department of Homeland Security said in a statement they were working around the clock to quickly move children out of the packed border facilities.
Also, EU pledges more than $650 million in humanitarian aid for Syrians.
There's less violence, but there's more suffering. And that is because of the economic consequences primarily.
Plus, U.S. orders non-essential staff out of Myanmar. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is in the U.S. A top U.S. border official has said he expects more than a million migrants will arrive at the U.S.-Mexico border this year, a sign of a growing humanitarian challenge for President Joe Biden on the southeast border. Brian Wood of Reuters reports.
In South Texas, over 4,000 migrants are crammed into one facility, four times its capacity before the global health crisis. Most are unaccompanied minors. The Biden administration allowed reporters to tour this processing facility in Donna on Tuesday. Acting executive officer for U.S. Border Patrol in the region, Oscar Escamilla, said many of the children have gone through long and harrowing journeys on their own.
These kids cross by themselves. Obviously, the parent pays a fee to the smuggler. The cartel member or the smuggler at this point will bring the kid over. We'll bring him to the river. We'll hand him over to the raft. We'll place them in a raft and say, okay, go. When you get to the other side, they'll explain to them there's going to be an officer. They'll explain what we wear and tell them, turn yourselves into them.
The Donna facility footage shared with Reuters showed young children sitting inside a playpen, some as young as 3 years old. More than 2,000 unaccompanied children have been held here for longer than a legal limit of 72 hours. Escamilla says these kids slipped through the cracks of the immigration system. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security said in a statement they were, quote, working around the clock to quickly move children out of the packed border facilities. The Government Health and Human Services Refugee Office did not immediately respond to a request for comment.
That's Brian Wood of Reuters. The State Department has released its annual country report on human rights. The report examines how nations treat their citizens from the voting booth to the workplace. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports.
Too many people continue to suffer under brutal human rights conditions in 2020. This, according to the State Department's annual country report that examines how governments treat their people. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken presented the report, opening with a grim outlook.
The report we're releasing today shows that the trend lines on human rights continue to move in the wrong direction. We see evidence that in every region of the world, this is happening.
Blinken called the Chinese government's treatment of its minority religious and ethnic groups genocide. The report lists violence against and imprisonment of critics and journalists in places like Russia and Belarus. Washington Director at Human Rights Watch, Sarah Holowinski, says the report highlights an administrative shift in foreign policy.
When you look up sort of definition of human rights abuses, Iran is right up there. And I think this administration in particular has an interest in calling out what those abuses are, not only to hold them accountable.
Blinken also mentioned the violence in Myanmar following a military coup there after Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy Party won a landslide election in November. Holowinski says accountability in this report gives dignity to victims.
The more that states are using these kinds of human rights reports to make their policies, that means that human rights is at the table.
Holowinski says that approach to policymaking could influence one country's decision to send weapons of war to another. For Arash Arabasadi in Washington, Amy Katz, VOA News.
The State Department is ordering non-essential U.S. diplomats and their families to leave Myanmar as a deadly government crackdown on demonstrators protesting last month's coup intensifies. The department said Tuesday it will require those workers to depart the country in an upgrade of its previous instructions from February 14th, which had allowed them to leave voluntarily. In a brief statement, the department also reiterated an earlier warning for Americans not to travel to Myanmar. Reports say ethnic Kachin guerrillas have attacked a police outpost in northern Myanmar in the latest indication of the deepening involvement of ethnic minority armed forces in opposition to the junta that seized power 2 months ago. This, as many ethnic rebel groups are split on whether to step in to support protesters as the violence widens to draw in border areas. Lucy Fielder of Reuters reports.
This Thai village is on heightened alert after airstrikes just over the border in Myanmar forced thousands to flee and raised the fear of armed clashes, following an escalation in the military's crackdown on anti-coup protesters. Jumi, who runs a restaurant in Thailand's northern Mai Hong Son province, says if something happens, they were told to grab their bags and escape.
There have been drills by the authorities and assistant village chief, teaching the villagers what they should do.
Fighting has flared in recent days between the army and rebel forces in the east and north. Myanmar has 24 or so ethnic armed factions, and they control vast swathes of the country. Most agreed ceasefires in recent years. But now many anti-coup protesters want them to join forces and take on the ruling junta. Yord Serk is a Myanmar rebel general from a group called the Restoration Council of Shan State. At his base in Chiang Mai, northern Thailand, he agrees with the protesters that the groups must form a federal army.
If the ethnic arms group's ideology is to protect their own people and the country, they should no longer be able to just stand by and do nothing. We now have one common enemy. We need to join hands and work together.
Other groups are reluctant. Back in Mai Hong Son, Khu U Ray of the Karenni National Progressive Party says the Myanmar military could use the involvement of rebel groups to its advantage.
The police and the army.
It might encourage soldiers and police to more violence, he says, and they could accuse us of being behind it. Thailand has been accused of helping the Myanmar military. On Monday, it denied turning back thousands of refugees. And in early March, the Thai army denied sending sacks of rice to Myanmar military units across the border after local reports surfaced.
That's Lucy Fielder of Reuters. World leaders are calling for a pandemic treaty, but the declarations are short on details so far. AP correspondent Charles Della Desma reports.
More than 20 heads of government and global agencies are in principle agreeing to the move, with their few details to explain how such an agreement might compel countries to act more cooperatively. World Health Organization Director General Tedros says the world cannot afford to wait until the pandemic is over to start planning for the next one. He hopes the treaty would provide a framework for international cooperation and solidarity and address issues like surveillance systems and responding to outbreaks. Charles de Ledesma, London.
UN aid agencies say thousands of deeply traumatized survivors of last week's massacre in Palma District in northern Mozambique have arrived in Pemba, the capital of Cabo Delgado province, and many more reportedly are on the way. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The International Organization for Migration reports more than 3,360 people have arrived in Pemba and other districts in Mozambique's Cabo Delgado province. IOM spokesman Paul Dillon says they've been arriving by foot, bus, plane, and boat. He says many have fled with nothing but the clothes they are wearing.
Our staff on the ground have been told that many of those evacuated saw their family members being killed, that they hid in the forest for days to evade the armed men who attacked their communities. Others, of course, do not know where their family members are. They reported also that many homes were destroyed.
Dozens of civilians reportedly have been killed by Islamist militants who attacked Palma on March 24th. Aid agencies report the situation there remains very volatile. Communications have been cut, so information is hard to get. An insurgency that broke out in Cabo Delgado in October 2017 by Islamist militants to establish an Islamist state has since developed into a humanitarian crisis. It has displaced some 700,000 civilians, half of them children. UN Children's Fund spokeswoman Marixi Mercado is in Pemba. She says UNICEF teams were at Pemba Airport Monday to receive children who had been evacuated from Afungi, a district in Palma.
There were at least 7 children on that plane who were completely alone. All the children are disoriented and afraid. Many have spent days hiding in the bush without food and water. There were some terrible scenes. One injured girl, around 5 years old, was carried off the plane, moaning in pain. We can't confirm her age because she was so traumatized, all she could say was her name.
Mercado says Pemba Provincial Hospital is doing its best to care for injured children. Aid agencies are rushing emergency supplies to the area. The World Health Organization reports it has enough medical supplies in the province to support the population for now. The World Food Program is providing emergency food aid and is pre-positioning thousands of response ration kits in the southern parts of Mozambique's Palma district. The UN Humanitarian Air Service, which is run by WFP, is providing an air bridge to transport critical supplies and staff and to evacuate civilians from Palma. Other UN and private agencies also are contributing essential material relief, as well as protection and crucial psychosocial counseling to help the many victims of this brutal attack deal with their ongoing distress. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Details are emerging of the weekend attack on the town of Palma in Mozambique's war-torn Cabo Delgado province. On Monday, the Islamic State claimed responsibility for the attack, which took place shortly after French oil and gas company Total began restarting its natural gas projects in the region. Dozens are feared dead, including at a hotel where many foreign workers had sought refuge during an international rescue effort. VOA's Jason Patankin spoke to journalist Tom Barker, who edits the Mozambique-focused Zitamar News website, for the latest.
The town is divided between the insurgents and government forces. Some Mozambican media were taken up to Cabo Delgado and flown over Palma yesterday in helicopters by the Mozambican military. And they were been told by the military that the military have half the town under control. The government claiming they're on their way to liberating it, but I'm a bit more sceptical because it could be that the insurgents are just hanging on to the bits they want to hang on to, and they could be a long time before they're dislodged.
And what's the latest word on casualties from the fighting?
Probably the most recent estimate from anyone was the Islamic State claim that they'd killed 55 people, which, to be honest, given some of the reports and guesstimates from people who'd spoken to eyewitnesses coming out of there, I was surprised that was so low and relieved, obviously. But I mean, it's still a terrible death toll, but I guess it seems now that the death toll is probably in the tens rather than the hundreds. The Mozambique government also said tens. People had suggested that in the ambush on the convoy that fled the Amarula Hotel, that even 50 people had died just in that one event. So if you then add that to the civilians and refugees living in Palma who were, according to some accounts, slaughtered at the beginning of the attack, you know, it sounded like we were going to be looking at easily a triple figures death toll, but perhaps not.
The Amarula Hotel, that's where a lot of foreigners associated with the Total gas project were located. And there was an attempt to evacuate them. Is there any word, not just on foreigners, but for all residents on evacuations from Pemba?
Some people are being evacuated by air. So DAG, the mercenary helicopter operation, say that they have been picking up people in helicopters, taking them to the airstrip at Afungi, which serves the Total project. And from there, they are largely being flown down to Maputo. The South African government put on a plane to fly people back to South Africa from Afungi. But also there are boats, large boats, as well as smaller dhows, taking people down to Pemba, the provincial capital. One boat, I think, had something like 1,300 people on it, a mixture of, you know, migrant workers working on the project, some of whom are foreign. I think easily the majority are Mozambicans as well, probably from elsewhere in Mozambique, but also locals fleeing Palma, some of which have fled previously to Palma from elsewhere, thinking that Palma might be safe. It turns out it was wrong. The UN said in a report they released yesterday that Palma was home to 43,600 displaced people from elsewhere in the province who'd sought safety in Palma.
And is there any indication of displacement from this latest attack? You mentioned thousands were already displaced to Palma. Could it be that thousands more are now displaced again?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think a lot of people have fled north towards Tanzania. That's in the hundreds at least. I don't know if it reached 1,000, but up to 500, I think, apparently at the border settlement of Namoto. People have fled inland. People have walked up to 100 kilometers to Nangad, which is a town on the way to Mueda. And the people of Nangad are now concerned that they're the insurgents' next target.
That's Dan Boka, editor of the Mozambique focused Zitama News website. He spoke with my colleague Jason Potenkin. This is the Voice of America. Residents of Niger's capital say there was gunfire early Wednesday, not far from the presidential palace. The development has raised fears of a coup attempt amid deepening instability in the West African nation, long under attack by Islamic extremists. The report of gunfire came 2 days before the president, Mohamed Bazoum's inauguration. The shooting went on for more than 15 minutes, residents of Niamey said, but calm had returned to the city afterward. Australia says it will begin building its own guided missile in close collaboration with the US as it seeks to boost its defense capabilities. The news comes amid growing unease in the Pacific region about China's increasingly assertive role. Citing the quote, changing global environment, unquote, Prime Minister Scott Morrison says it will partner with a weapons manufacturer to build the missiles in a plan that will create thousands of jobs as well as export opportunities. Pfizer says its COVID-19 vaccine is safe and strongly protective in kids as young as 12. The announcement Wednesday marks a step towards possible beginning shots in this age group before the next school year. Most COVID-19 vaccines being rolled out worldwide are for adults who are at a higher risk from the coronavirus. Pfizer's vaccine is authorized for ages 16 and older. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Cameroon's military has deployed troops in northern border with Nigeria after a series of attacks authorities said were carried out by the terrorist group Boko Haram. The group did not claim responsibility, but Cameroonian authorities say they also deployed village militias in response to the attacks. Moki Edwin Kinzeki reports from Yaoundé.
Several dozen villagers fled for their lives and are still hiding in the bushes in the areas near the border of the village, Kulbe said. Villagers identified at least 20 corpses after the fight between the attackers and Cameroon military. Mijiyawa Bakari is the governor of Cameroon's far north region that shares a border with Nigeria's Borno state, epicenter of the terrorist group, according to the United Nations. He says more than 100 fighters attacked a Cameroon military base in Dabanga that Saturday. The heavily armed fighters were on board 6 pickup trucks and 20 motorcycles, Bakari said, speaking to VOA from Marwa, capital of the far north region of Cameroon.
Nous avons perdu un de nos vaillants éléments. Deux autres ont été...
He says the terrorist killed a soldier and wounded 2 members of the Cameroon military who are undergoing treatment at a local hospital. The Cameroonian military killed 20 fighters and seized 6 pickup trucks, 7 motorcycles and weapons the terrorist used in the attack, says Bakari. He says, unfortunately, 2 civilians, including a pregnant woman, died in the shootout between troops and the terrorists. Boko Haram has not claimed responsibility over the attack. On Tuesday, Cameroon said it had intelligence that several hundred heavily armed Boko Haram fighters are hiding on its northern border with Nigeria, planning attacks on Cameroon. The military said troops have been deployed to protect the border zone and recommended that civilians be vigilant and report strange visitors to their villages. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
European Union has pledged more than $650 million in humanitarian aid for Syrians during a Brussels pledging conference co-hosted by the United Nations, as aid officials warn of escalating needs inside and outside the war-torn country. From Paris, Lisa Bryant reports for VOA, the UN seeks a record $10 billion in aid for Syrians this year.
This is the fifth humanitarian pledging conference for Syrians since their country plunged into a brutal and ongoing civil war a decade ago. Instead of getting better, the UN relief chief, Mark Lowcock, says their humanitarian situation is getting worse.
There's less violence, but there's more suffering. And that is because of the economic consequences primarily that have been wrought on Syria. There's an increase in the number of people who are in need of humanitarian assistance, and the scale and severity of their needs is also higher than it's ever been.
Lowcock says the UN is matching the soaring needs with its biggest ever response plan. But that costs money. Of the $10 billion the UN aimed to raise at the Brussels conference, $4.2 billion is for Syrians inside their country, and another $5.8 billion for Syrian refugees and their hosts in the Middle East. The billions requested come at a time when the coronavirus pandemic has crippled many economies and aid workers fear Syria donor fatigue. That's apparently not the case with the European Union. The EU's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, announced the bloc's €560 million pledge for 2021, more than $656 million, is on par with last year. Overall, the UN's Lowcock says last year's Syria conference actually raised more money than was pledged. Syrian needs are immense. Borrell listed a grim tally from 10 years of conflict, more than 400,000 dead, 12 million internally displaced or refugees, and 13 million needing humanitarian support. He also delivered a message to President Bashar al-Assad's regime and other actors in the crisis.
The future of Syria belongs to none of the factions and to none of the outside powers. It's for Syrians to shape in Syrian-known and Syrian-led negotiations under the auspices of the United Nations. If they do, we will respond.
Syria is falling apart. It's a broken country. The Assad regime has won the war, but they're failing to win the peace. And that means that it will continue to be a source of instability and regional problems for quite some time to come.
Julian Barnes-Stacey heads the Middle East program at the European Council on Foreign Relations Policy Institute. Beyond humanitarian concerns, he says, not addressing Syria's ongoing crisis carries considerable security risks for the international community.
I think that will mean the potential for refugee flows, new space for extremist mobilization, regional spillover and instability. All of these are risks that will affect Europe in particular.
UN humanitarian chief Lowcock put it another way. He said supporting Syria's children was in everybody's interest, including for strategic reasons. What will they be like when they grow up, he asked, if all they know is a world of war and if all they see is suffering? Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.